Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. As you know, we are hearing oral arguments by Zoom today. The last oral case on our calendar today is A24-1038, State of Minnesota versus Romelio Balderas. Hopefully, I pronounced appellant's name correctly. If I did not, please feel free to give us the correct pronunciation. Counsel will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and your appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. And you can see the amount of time remaining in the Zoom grid screen. So, if you can, counsel can, for each party, can introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. We would greatly appreciate that for purposes of the recording. Counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Julia Brady and I represent appellant Romelio Balderas Jr. You got that correct, Judge Cochran. Mr. Balderas was a passenger in a car that was pulled over because the driver did not have a valid license. That routine traffic stop was subsequently expanded into a drug investigation. And as a result of that investigation, Mr. Balderas was arrested because he was found to have a gun that he was ineligible to possess. This appeal presents one question. Did the officer who conducted the traffic stop have reasonable, articulable suspicion to expand the scope of that stop into a drug investigation? The district court here stated that this case was a close call, but when the errors made by the district court are corrected, the answer becomes clear. There was no reasonable, articulable suspicion to expand the scope of this stop into a drug investigation. When reviewing the expansion of the scope of a traffic stop, courts consider only the facts that were available to the officer at the time of expansion.
Ms. Brady, can
Yes.
I? You seem to suggest in your briefing two different times. I want to kind of pin you down of when the stop was expanded for your client, because you seem to, if I read it correctly, and if it's two different times and one's earlier in time, I assume that's really the one you're asking us to focus on. But I'm wondering about the legal authority for focusing on when the driver is asked to step out of the car. In other words, there seems to be no dispute as a matter of law now, but at least federal law, and I think our state case Supreme Court has confirmed that a passenger is at least temporarily seized of a car in which the driver is seized. So, when am I reading your brief correctly that you're arguing that your client was illegally seized when a driver's asked to step out of the car?
Thank you, Your Honor. No, that's not what we're arguing. And I apologize if my brief was unclear on that point. So the stop was expanded twice during this encounter. It was when the driver was questioned about narcotics. So it's not specifically being asked to step out of the car. It's the questioning about the narcotics of the driver that my client would have authority to challenge, because if the scope of this stop was expanded illegally with regards to that questioning of the driver, then that seizure, he's still seized at that point. He has the ability to challenge that seizure. However, it,
Under what l law are you citing?
yes, so that would be, I believe it would be the same law that would be the authority, just saying that a passenger is seized and has standing to challenge a seizure, just generally, which is the United States Supreme Court authority. I apologize. I don't have the case name in front of me. I'm happy to
Well,
provide.
I think the Brendan, I believe, was the
Yes.
U.S.,
Yes, Brendan. Thank you.
but that case confirmed your what's uncontested here is that a passenger may contest a stop, but I didn't see from that or any subsequent decisions that is referring to an expansion, at least an expansion of the driver, which really isn't an issue here.
Yeah. So we would, two things to that, Your Honor. So the expansion, I would argue, the expansion of that stop is just an extension of Brendan in that court, in that case. The stop, the passenger is able to contest the stop because it's an illegal seizure. So the passenger is seized, and if the stop is illegal, it's an illegal seizure. So, extending that under Brendan, it's the same premise. If the scope of the stop is expanded illegally, it would theoretically be an illegal seizure. However, if this court concludes that that's not the case, if Mr. Balderas does not have standing to challenge the questioning of Mr. Gomez, we still believe that this court should reverse the district court because he does have standing to challenge the second expansion, which was the questioning as it specifically relates to him. So if this court concludes there was reasonable suspicion to question Mr. Gomez, there was not reasonable suspicion to expand that stop yet again and question Mr. Balderas about narcotics.
And what are you pointing to in the record specifically that would make, I'm assuming would make the expansion of your client by asking him about drugs? And
Yes.
what case law would you be pointing us to that asking that question would be prohibited?
Yes. So the purpose and the content of the questioning that Officer McSweeney did means that this was expanded specifically into a drug investigation of my client. So Officer McSweeney asked questions of both the driver, but also of my client, because he suspected that something was going on and he wanted to investigate illegal narcotics. He employed an interdiction technique type of questioning where he named off specific narcotics to both the passenger and the driver, and then he asked if there was anything illegal in the car. So that questioning counts as an expansion into a drug investigation, and there's a lot of authority that supports that. So specifically in State versus Fort, which is a Minnesota Supreme Court case from 2003, the Minnesota Supreme Court concluded that questions that are aimed at soliciting evidence of drugs and weapons are considered to be particularly invasive and count as a stop expansion that requires the support of reasonable articulable suspicion. And then in State versus Smith, which is also a Minnesota Supreme Court case, the Minnesota Supreme Court actually rejected the state's argument in the first footnote of that case. The state had argued that a single question can't expand a stop. And the Minnesota Supreme Court in that footnote actually said, no, we're rejecting that. Depending on the content of that question, it can expand the stop. And I think even there's even more authority from this court. I'll just highlight one case, State versus Savong, which is a Minnesota Court of Appeals case from 2003, where the question that was asked was, is there anything illegal in the car? And this court concluded that even that one question counted as an expansion that needed the support of reasonable articulable suspicion. So specific.
Would you agree here, and maybe this is the distinction in Fort, as I recall, that the passenger, there was no evidence of any wrongdoing by anybody other than the traffic, but I may be wrong in my recollection specifically, but wouldn't it be true that by the time the officer is asking your client the question, he can take into account all of the totality of the facts, including the stop, including his conversation and experience with the driver, before then finally talking to your client? In other words, all of that's added, and that's the state's argument that there was a reasonable suspicion given all that information to inquire.
We would dispute that interpretation of the law, Your Honor. So reasonable suspicion has to be particularized and individualized to the person that the criminal. Yeah, Judge Cochran, do you have a?
Oh, I was going to ask when you're done with your
Oh, okay.
answer.
So it has to be particularized and individualized. So not every factor that was relied on by Officer McSweeney to potentially have reasonable suspicion to question Mr. Gomez can and should be applied to Mr. Balderas. So specifically the factors that I do not believe should be applied to Mr. Balderas when analyzing whether or not that expansion was constitutional are the delay and stop. Mr. Balderas was not driving, and there are no furtive movements that Officer McSweeney observed during that delay that would maybe indicate that there was some type of activity by Mr. Balderas that went on during that delay. And then also the history of drug use. Mr. Balderas does not have a history of drug use that we know of from this record. And there's ample authority that says that mere association with somebody who has a history of drugs does not support reasonable articulable suspicion. So I guess then if you want to potentially say, well, Mr. Gomez is suspected of reasonable suspicion, so does that transpute onto or transplant onto Mr. Balderas? That is not a very strong indication of criminal activity on Mr. Balderas's part, because the reasonable suspicion here for Mr. Gomez, assuming the court finds that that is the case, which we're not conceding, but it's particularized to Mr. Gomez. And so what you're looking at here, when you factor that in to how it impacts the analysis for my client, You just have somebody, again, it's that association piece. So it's the association with somebody who is suspected of some type of drug activity, and it's not a sale. They're not coming from a known drug house. There's nothing here that would indicate that there's any type of common, criminal enterprise between the car's occupants when it comes to the suspicion as it goes towards Mr. Gomez. So really what you're looking at for the facts, when you're analyzing whether suspicion is present for questioning my client about narcotics, is smoking and sweating. And
So,
neither of
and I just want to follow up there. That was a question I had is to what extent would you agree it's appropriate to consider the group of three, the conduct by the group of three in the car versus just appellant's conduct? Because I agree with you that the case law says the suspicion has to be particularized, but in this context where you have three people in a car and the car is being pulled over for a traffic violation, is there any case law that suggests that the officer or the court in determining whether there's reasonable articulable suspicion that the totality of the circumstances doesn't include the conduct of the other people in the car, given that it can be potentially indicative of drug use?
So there's not, to my knowledge, case law that says you can't consider the conduct as a whole if everybody is involved in that conduct. If one person seems particularly nervous, or if one person is, clutching a pocket or a backpack in a way that maybe is more supportive of suspicion to them, that might factor in. But here, I think that the conduct as to the three of them, which again would be only the sweating and the smoking, can be considered because my client was involved in those things. And neither of those things, even looking individually or, under a totality of the circumstances, support a conclusion that my client was engaged in any type of criminal activity. So I think the sweating situation, Officer McSweeney stated that you could infer there that, they were nervous or that they were under the influence of some type of, substance. But, it's 70 degrees, it's June, it's sunny, they're not driving, so there's no breeze. They're wearing sweatshirts. It's perfectly normal to sweat in a situation like that that has nothing to do with drugs or nervousness. And there's no other signs of intoxication or nervousness present. There are no evasive answers, there's no furtive movements, the eye contact is consistent. And, when you're looking at a case like State v. Smith from the Minnesota Supreme Court, you had nervousness and shaking there that was considered to be an unusual amount compared to what you would see during a standard traffic stop.
Ms. Brady, if I recall in reading that in our court, and the Supreme Court didn't comment on that. I think that's the case that we commented that simply asking if there's anything illegal is not itself an expansion. So, do you agree with that? Or if you disagree, do you have any? Part of the reason I guess I'm asking is where the real illegal part of the expansion from your client's standpoint, is it asking that, or is it obviously then seizing and looking at the bag itself that led to the incriminating evidence?
So it would be asking the questions about narcotics to my client. So this State v. Smith, from my understanding, was a non-precedential case at this court and then was appealed to the Minnesota Supreme Court. So the Minnesota Supreme Court here, which would be technically the authority on that, it while it doesn't specifically address the Smith situation in terms of whether or not it was expansion, because it concludes that even if it was reasonable suspicion supported it, it does. It's that same thing that I was saying earlier. It does in that footnote reject the argument that a single question cannot expand the stop. And as I mentioned those cases previously, there are cases from both this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court that state that even a single question, just asking, is there anything illegal in the car, can expand the scope of a stop. And here you have more than a single question. You have a full interdiction questioning, which includes naming off our narcotics to see the reaction of the passenger, of my client, and you have the question of whether or not anything was illegal. And so to quickly touch
And part
on
of the reason, of course, you added the answer that way, I understand. I forgot about the fact, obviously, that's when he admitted to the bowl and the marijuana, which then, if it was properly asked, you then wouldn't contest perhaps then the seizing of the bag. Your point being is they had never should have been asked.
Exactly. And we believe that that's one of the biggest errors that the district court made, is that it considered facts that were established during the questioning of my client when it was looking at whether reasonable articulable suspicion existed. And it should not have considered those questions. It never actually found explicitly that reasonable articulable suspicion existed to question these individuals. All it said was it was justified by the totality of the circumstances. The only time it concluded reasonable suspicion existed was after it looked at facts that were established during that questioning. And to briefly touch on the smoking piece of this, it's the officer was standing there for a minute or two before all three individuals had smoke, were smoking. He never testified that any odors were present. And while he testifies that there is, generally, or it could be indicative of criminal behavior, when you put that kind of general testimony about general criminal behavior within the context of the fact that he didn't smell any odors during the 2 minutes that he was standing there, that assumption of, or that inference of criminal behavior falls away. So for that reason, we would ask this court to reverse the district court's denial of my client's motion and then to reverse his conviction as well. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Haas, you can proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jim Haas. I'm an assistant Olmsted County attorney, and I represent the state of Minnesota in this case. Judge Chase wrote a very thorough and thoughtful memorandum, and I'm not sure I can add too much to his analysis, but I'd like to speak just more broadly to the application of these principles in Terry, Askruth, and related cases. As we know, first, we look to whether the stop was justified, and there's no dispute about that here. And secondly, we ask as to whether the stop became intolerable in its intensity, scope, or duration. And I submit to the court that when we examine these factors, we look to the sort of the totality of the circumstances. I'm not sure any one of these is controlling, but we look to all of these things. And of course, a Fourth Amendment analysis is always based on reasonableness. And when
so, counsel, when was the scope of the stop expanded in your view, and what case law do you rely on for that?
Sure. Well, the one thing Judge Chasen immediately points out, and if you could look on page 9 of his order, he notes that Officer McSweeney had only been in Mr. Gomez's window for 2 minutes when he directed Mr. Balderas to stay in the vehicle. And it wasn't long after that then Mr. Gomez had been asked to step out. Judge Chase notes that even if the only business yet to be transacted was writing and issuing a DAS citation to Mr. Gomez and getting a licensed driver behind the wheel, the traffic stop would not have been completed within 2 minutes. And I think it's important to, again, take into context the duration of a seizure. What would a typical traffic stop take to do all of these things? 5, 10 minutes, something along these lines, to process all the things what need to be done. So I think that's an important factor. So it was fairly, I would argue that the duration of this stop, its
do you
intensity.
Agree with appellant's counsel that the stop was, the scope was expanded when the attorney, or when the officer asked questions about drug use or narcotics?
Well, I think as Judge Chase says on page 10, that there's no question this traffic stop was expanded into a drug investigation. But let's remember what that's based on. Officer McSweeney was familiar with Mr. Gomez. He, back when he came up to the car, he just referred to him as Wilfredo. He knew him and recognized him because he'd personally been involved in a fentanyl overdose at Bob's Trailer Court earlier within the past year. So he knew full well that Mr. Gomez was involved either as a user, if not a seller of illegal drugs. So that was the context that we start off with. So there's already some suspicion. He notes the delay in the stopping. He notes that the parties all immediately light up cigarettes. He notes Officer McSweeney observes perspiration. Now, Judge Chase notes that it can't be discerned from the video, but he finds McSweeney a credible witness and doesn't dispute those observations and what impact they may have on Officer McSweeney's suspicions. So again, I think it's very different than Fort. In the Fort case, we have an 18-year-old African-American male. He has a passenger in the car. It stopped for a cracked windshield in what the officers considered a high drug area. But with no other suspicions or anything else, they ask Fort if there's any drugs or weapons in the car. And when he says no, he said, well, then you don't mind if we search the car, do you? And they leap from that traffic stop into a vehicle search. And I think that's what offended the Supreme Court in that. That's not our scenario here, though.
But Mr. Hust, a lot of the and this is the point Ms. Brady makes, a part of the suspicion, I think, although she has a two-part seizure argument, I was asking more, and I think most of our questions were on the second argument. Isn't it true that there was no testimony of similar knowledge of Mr. Balderas in terms of drugs, and of course he's not involved in the stop. So the only thing I think, as Ms. Brady quoting her, is smoking and sweating. Does
Well,
that create and under all the totality of the circumstances, just because he's riding with a known drug user, sufficient to ask him about drug use?
and let's maybe step back as to where it's expanded. Judge Chase rightfully cites the State versus Ortega, where our Supreme Court says police can order a passenger out of a vehicle. I'm quoting it. Police can order a passenger out of a vehicle as the passengers are already stopped by the stop of the vehicle. And the only change is that they are outside of and not inside of the stopped vehicle. So that's the first step. Is I don't know, I would disagree that it's really an expansion at this point to simply
Well,
say,
let's jump ahead.
let's.
I think I understand your point there, because and it looks like the U.S. Supreme Court's confirmed what MIMS for a driver, the passenger, can be asked out of the vehicle. My question is, at the time the officer asked about drugs, would it be safe to presume, under the totality involving him only, that, as Ms. Brady said, smoking and sweating?
Well, again, I don't know that Mr. Balderas was necessarily a subject. I think he's really focused on Gomez, who he knows is involved with drugs, and what might be in the car. On page 17 of the transcript,
But doesn't that support Ms. Brady's argument? If he's not a focus, you're going back to the driver, but we're not here for the driver, the passenger. And I assume you would agree there would have to be specific, particularized reasons to ask the passenger or related to drugs, separate from the driver.
Well, I'm not sure I entirely agree. I mean, I guess the question to him from the transcript was, the question was, did you talk to Mr. Balderas about potential illegal items in the vehicle? And McSweeney says, I did. So I suspect the question there is, hey, is there anything, in the vehicle I need to know about, anything illegal? That could be weapons, that could be drugs. But again, by the time that occurred, Officer McSweeney has had all of this information. He knows Gomez. He knows him, Wilfredo. He calls him Wilfredo. He knows of his drug involvement.
You would
He
agree,
knows
though,
that.
that mere association is not sufficient. So, how does knowing Gomez factor in? Are you arguing it's part of the totality of the circumstances appropriately
Yes.
considered?
I think there was a legitimate, at that point, inquiry. It's limited. It's not unduly expanding the scope, or it's not unduly expanding the duration of the stop. I would argue it's not really expanding the intensity of the stop. This was a polite, calm encounter. Remember, we view the Fourth Amendment through the vantage point of the reasonable and prudent person. A person hiding contraband wants no contact with police. Any contact with that sort of person may feel intolerable to them, but that's not the lens through which we see this. And I would say that the reasonable and prudent person would not find this encounter, if we look at it through its totality, as we watch the body camera video, to be intolerable in its intensity. There was a legitimate reason to ask Mr. Gomez to step out of the vehicle to talk to him. And the purpose of these folks was to see what their stories were. The questions were really more along the lines of, what are you guys doing today and where are you coming from? And when they gave different stories of where they'd been and where they were coming from, that added to the totality, which led then to the search of the vehicle, which is not really in dispute because of, well, it was a consent search as well, but we're getting beyond the issue. But I guess when I would, my argument simply is, when you look at the totality of everything at that point, there was already a suspicion of drug use or drugs in the car with Gomez. When you ask the passenger, hey, is there anything illegal in the car? Follow, by the way, this was after he'd given a different story as to where they'd been. And you put it together with all those little factors, any one of which is not maybe enough, but put together, I think Judge Chase correctly found that at that point, it did not offend our constitutional principles. Again, I think Judge Chase wrote a pretty thorough analysis here. I'm not sure that I can add much to it. If the court
Counsel,
has any questions, go ahead.
appellant's counsel argues that we should not consider the slowing down or the time it took Gomez to pull over because that was Gomez's conduct and not Valdera's conduct. Can you respond to that argument?
Well, again, the question is, are there drugs in the car? I think Gomez, if I'm putting myself in McSweeney's shoes, I mean, I think he's sort of focused on Gomez and what contraband Gomez might have in this car that he's driving. So he knew it was Wilfredo Gomez when he first saw him drive by. That's why he followed him, because he knew he didn't have a valid driver's license or he was revoked. Again, in and of itself, it may not be enough, but when you put it together, I think it's part of the suspicion.
Thank you. Any further questions on the panel? All right. Thank you, Mr. Haas.
Thank you.
Ms. Brady, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are a couple of things that I would like to correct, I believe, from the record about what the state said. I think first it's important to note that when Mr. Gomez was asked if there was anything illegal in the car, he said no. The state has not posited that there was any probable cause to search the car. Any search of the car would have only been done because of consent from Mr. Gomez. Additionally, thinking about what questions were asked to Mr. Balderas, the record is not clear. It does not say that the questions that were asked of Mr. Balderas were only about, Mr. Gomez's activity or only about what Mr. Gomez might have in the car. And it is the state's burden to satisfy and to show that this stop was constitutional. What we know, based on the record that we have, is that he asked Mr. Balderas. He named off certain narcotics. He did the same type of interdiction questioning to Mr. Balderas as he did to Mr. Gomez. He named certain narcotics to see Mr. Balderas's reaction, and he asked him about anything illegal. He said, "Do you have anything illegal?" Or I don't even know if he said, "Do you have anything illegal?" He just asked him about potential items that were illegal in the vehicle after Mr. Gomez already said no. So this is just not a situation where, if the state. If he's really focused on Gomez, then that's even stronger. That supports our argument that, there's no reason to ask Mr. Balderas about narcotics, or about his involvement with narcotics. And I think that additionally, I really want to say that the history of drug use here, there's no indication of sale. The state said in its argument, potentially, maybe he was involved in use. Maybe he even sold. There's absolutely no allegation here that Mr. Gomez was involved in sale. And like I said, if there is any type of association between Mr. Gomez and Mr. Balderas, it's not anything, there's no support for it being a common criminal enterprise or anything like that. The last thing I want to touch on is just this idea that, the duration became intolerable. First off, we're challenging scope. The scope and duration have to be supported, or if there's expansion of the scope or the duration, it has to be supported by reasonable articulable suspicion. And in State versus Savong, which is again that case from this court in 2003, the court specifically said detention of an individual during the routine stop, even for a brief period, constitutes a seizure. Activities that exceed the scope of that stop are not made reasonable because they are short in duration. So even if, the questioning, as I've said, even if it's one or two questions about narcotics, just because it's a short line of questioning, which again, we don't actually know the body cam footage that was submitted during this hearing, it stops before that questioning occurred. So we don't know how long that questioning went on. You can't say that it's reasonable just because it was short.
Ms.
And
Brady, the Supreme Court recently, I think it was the State v. Garding case, which reversed our court, largely because of the what their interpretation, we weren't giving due emphasis to the experience and training of the officer about all the observations. And I'm thinking of that here, that the officer did testify. You would agree that all these signs, including the smoking and the sweating, and the reason a car might slow down or not stop immediately from his training and experience would lead to dot dot. You fill in the blanks from his testimony. So when you have that, and you have a known drug user and et cetera, if the officer knew personally, does that then all of that together lead to more than merely association and inference, but at least lead to a totality that it's reasonable to at least inquire about drugs or illegal items?
No, Your Honor. We do not believe that it does. And I think that it's really important when you're looking at reasonable suspicion to make sure that it's particularized. I've already said why certain things are not particularized to Mr. Balderas, but I think just on the delay and stop, I will touch on that because if this court decides that it can consider that as it goes to Mr. Balderas, then it's important to note that it's not even clear here that Mr. Gomez delayed the stop because he was trying to avoid some type of officer interaction or law enforcement interaction. The record establishes that Officer McSweeney pulled up behind Mr. Gomez, initiated just his lights. It's the middle of the day, or not the middle, but the sun is out. So it's not the night where it's very clear if there's red and blue lights behind you. So it's possible that he didn't even see the lights that were initiated. And that is supported by the fact that the second that the siren was initiated, Mr. Gomez pulled over. He drove across a busy intersection and then he pulled over. So he really didn't delay the stop once it was very clear to him that he was being stopped. If the court has no further questions, we respectfully ask that you reverse. Thank you.
Looks like you're muted, Judge Cochran.
Sorry. Thank you, Judge Slater. That concludes the oral argument in this matter and our oral calendar here today. Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame. We are now adjourned to consider the non-oral matter on our calendar and have a great day to both counsel.